go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. We are off and running on this, the 21st day of October 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump in the chat room and be part of the merrymaking, the madcap, zany, multimedia, real-time extravaganza that takes place during the time that the program is live every evening, Monday through Friday, from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. If you do go and pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into the aforementioned madcap zany multimedia real-time extravaganza, you will be greeted there by Anatole and Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom, and others as they arrive for this Friday on the front porch. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave once again, because I take it things are probably a little nicer out in Northern California right now than they are in Central Appalachia. Cold outside. They're actually using the dirty four-letter word tonight. You know the one. The one that starts with, you know, S and includes N, O, and W. Okay, maybe that's just for the higher elevations. Mostly we just get poured on. And it's a cold, pouring, it's you know, one of those drenching, soaking rains. It's not, you know, none of that dollar-sized raindrop sideways stuff. This is just straight down, like little ice cold needles.
I guess that's to be expected this far into October. I mean, I've seen it snow here before.
Anyway, that's what's happening in the chat room. Steve from Georgistan noting in the chat room, luckily the front porch is heated. We got one of those little infrared affairs that hangs from the rafters and keeps us all toasty and warm on the front porch. Folks will wander along towards said front porch here in about, 55 minutes or so. The gentlest of reminders, this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. It has been, as of this coming Monday, it will have been so for 11 continuous years. Yeah, our 11th anniversary is on Monday, which is, and that's for the internet-only version. The also-including terrestrial radio version is a little bit older. But the internet-only version premiered on August the 24th, 2005. And I find that stunning to even contemplate. My whole family's grown up in that time. That's a lot of conversation. But it is a listener-supported broadcast operation. We try to raise about $200 every evening, just as the expression of an average of what it takes to pay all the bills around here. And that makes it pretty much a
stunning broadcast bargain. And we find ourselves this evening in rather a nasty little hole as we approach our anniversary date. And we've got $490 to raise this evening to end the week flush, you know, in the black. Right. It's a tidy, terrifying little sum there for a simple little broadcast operation like ours, but I don't know, maybe we'll find our way through it. It would be nice to not go into our anniversary broadcast on Monday talking about the, you know, the $690 hole we're in. So, if you'd like to help out, the PayPal button is over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab called Contribute. We are always excited to have new monthly subscribers. The reason the hole is not deeper than it is precisely because of monthly subscribers. Two of them last night, overnight. And so, deep and abiding thanks go out to our friend in Vermont at Shadow Mountain Graphics, and to Joan out in Tallabandiana. That's how come. That's how come it's not a $610 fundraising hole. Thank you to both of you very, very kindly. So, you know, $491 at $245, et cetera, et cetera. $49 at $10, $10 at $49, $98 at $5, $5 at $98. You get the idea. And that'll clear the week. And we can start anniversary, you know, celebrate our anniversary, you know, party hats, noisemakers, what have you, at Monday, and not be quite so stressed out. Okay? Ralph's is going to get us started this evening, offering a $25 challenge. She'll match the next $25 that comes in, and that will take us down to $440 to go, and that's big. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly. And of course, if you prefer the United States Postal Service, Boss Man Wayne goes by the UPS store. Where we have our post office box, and the clan does too. Jesus. He goes by there on Saturdays. So if you prefer the U.S. Postal Service, the mailing address for checks and money orders is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okay. Well, there's Laborman in the chat room telling everybody how to vote. Dadgummit, Laborman, you can't do that. Only Greens can tell us how to vote. Speaking of which, just a warning. I don't know. Depending on how fundraising goes this evening, we may periodically have to listen to a little bit of this and that, and that includes this. Yeah, the dulcet song stylings of Jill Stein. Don't make me play that again. It's been a weird week in Mount Colby Gone. I this is a true story. I'm not, and I've already cleared it with Ferg. It's okay to tell this story. Prayer meeting Wednesday. Well, okay, now back up. Over the weekend, I told you Ferg took a spill and separated his shoulder. Dinged himself up a bit. Walking around in one of those immobilizer slings that kind of holds his arm close to try to give the shoulder a chance to heal. Went to a friend's house Wednesday, prayer meeting Wednesday. You know, sometimes people say that, you know, that, oh, surely to goodness, I mean, the religion industry can't possibly be as weird as what that imitation preacher you do on Wednesday sounds like. On the other hand, I remember how our dear friend Kate out on the front range despised that little bit on Wednesdays, not because it was weird or improbable or not a reflection of reality, but because it was all too real. Well, this comes from the Department of All Too Real. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I think I missed that part. But I am. Yeah. As I was sitting down to prayer meeting Wednesday here in the studio, Ferg was visiting a friend's house. And it turns out the friend's parents are Pentecostals. And they saw that Ferg was in a sling. And, well, they wanted to lay the healing hands of faith on him and pray over him. And, you know, we tried to raise a decent set of kids. They mostly are. And so Ferg did not bust out all son of Bob Kincaid on him and get your hands off of me, you religious freaks. No. He was accommodating. And so they slapped him in the shoulder. And hauled around on his arm, trying to get the Holy Spirit there into his right shoulder joint. Carol said, Pentecostals? Were they dancing with snakes around the boy child? I wish it had only been snakes. No, instead they manhandled him real good. And made his shoulder worse than it is, or was. He looked at me and said, Dad, I can't catch a break. Randy in PA seems to be tuned into that frequency because he said, that boy needs to marry Calamity Jane. When Ferg was telling me about it, he said, Dad, you're not going to believe this. I said, oh, I don't know. There's a possibility. And he proceeded to tell me what happened. I said, no, I believe it. Because that's a socially awkward situation. I mean, what do you... You're in somebody... You're a guest in somebody's home. You don't just tell them, you know, I think your religion's crazy. And this is West Virginia where everybody has a gun. So, sure, lay the healing hands of faith on. And whatever wasn't up before has now been up in the name of Jesus. Even more so. No, no, Asa on the same wavelength as Sister Carol Baker's. Please tell me the Pentecostals were handling snakes, too. What, you want the boy bit? I'm just glad they didn't hand him the quart jar of strychnine to swig on. Yeah, that's where I looked. One of these days, I got to have a long talk with that boy. Meanwhile, in some of the elementary schools here in this state, they've got the little ones singing, and yeah, you do the Pledge of Allegiance and things like that. And apparently now they've got them singing, and I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. Only I'm sure in little tiny children's voices it sounds much prettier. Not kidding. Oh, God. It's been a week and Mount Colby gone. Robert up somewhere near Morgantown says, if you make one more nasty crack, and that's nasty with a capital N, I might add. If you make one more nasty crack about the Greens, I'm going to switch back from Hill to Jill. Well, I'm not in charge of what you do in the voting booth, Robert. I mean, it just. Well, I mean, you can't tell me you like this. Jesus, please, no. King Crimson, that ain't. Thanks very kindly to Brother Usher Steve up in New York. He's just answered a chunk of Ralph's $25 challenge to help knock things down a little bit. Thank you very kindly, Steve. $15 to go on that challenge. Thank you very, very kindly. Oh, what to do with this Friday on the front porch? I mean, there's oodles of stuff to talk about. Lots of crazy to catch up on. It's almost like we can't keep up anymore. There's a fresh batch of crazy every day. And after a while it begins to make your third eye burn. Just as an example, a little catching up. It's coming up to Halloween season, and forevermore, every Halloween, I will now have to think of Rick Wiles over at True News. That's TRNews, TRUNEWS, TRNews, and his perilous, heartwarming story of his Halloween walking of the dog last year when Gator the Golden Retriever recognized the demon inside the blow-up spider and stood and barked at the blow-up spider because the blow-up spider had a demon in it. Not air, demon. Because even Gator the Golden Retriever can recognize a demon when he sees one, especially when it's in the guise of a giant, freakishly painted blow-up spider in some neighbor's yard. Oh, and thank you. Yes, I just noticed that. Steve is now a happy new subscriber to the Horn, kicking in monthly. And this, by the way, this is that time of the month when we need, it gets especially dry from here to the end of the month. So all the subscribers we can get are wonderful. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. But anyway, Rick Wiles is, you know, he's constantly on the lookout for demons and so forth. And I don't know quite what to make of this, because sometimes prayer and prophecy is fun to examine looking backwards. Before the third debate took place, the third pageant, before the night of nasty and everything that went with it, Rick Wiles fired up his very, very well-funded little tax-free religion industry operation to let everybody know that he was on the job to save the debate for the guy who thinks vaginas have handles on them. To wit, this.
I will be praying, as I prayed in the other two debates. I prayed hours before the debate, intense intercessory prayer. And I prayed.
That would be intense intercessory prayer, not your common garden variety bullshit. Intercessory prayer, not your garden variety intercessory, intense intercessory prayer. What were you praying for, Rick? Hide not thy light under a bushel, brother.
At various times during the debate, I prayed that Donald Trump's mind would be clear, that there would be no interference, that the Lord would put a hedge of protection around his mind.
Apparently God was watching football that night or something. Because a clear mind is not exactly what we got. But anyway.
And his body. And that he would have sharp intellect and be in full command of his mental faculties.
You know, Rick, if I were you, I'd pray for somebody to figure out what it means when your meter goes up past the green and past the gold and into the red. It's called clipping, Rick. But, well, apparently God can't sort that out any better than he can clear the mind of Donald Trump. Oh, well.
Throughout the debate. This time, I will be praying that confusion would cloud Hillary Clinton's mind.
I don't ever want to get another goddamn email from any of you people telling me about the pregnancy of the pauses I take in this broadcast. Jesus, I could have run a couple of car ads in the middle of some of those. But so it didn't work when he prayed for, and yes, Carol Baker, yes, the goddess of irony never sleeps. He prayed for God to build a hedge around the, not just, I'd say a wall, around the mind of Donald Trump. It didn't work, so instead he's going to pray for Hillary Clinton to be confused. Did Hillary Clinton seem confused, you know, Wednesday night? Because she didn't seem particularly confused to me.
And that fear would come upon her. I'm asking the Lord to put fear in the camp of the enemy. I'm praying that Hillary Clinton will fall during this debate in whatever manner God chooses to bring her down.
Man, that is some loving Christian testimony, isn't it? I know, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, but like I said, we got to catch up with this stuff. Stockton Larry in the chat room wants to know, Bob, can you get one of them partial birth abortions to eliminate them manopauses? Mine or his? Don't answer. It really? I mean, and this guy's just another Christian. Just another follower of the loving, saving grace of Christ Jesus. And he's referring to Hillary Clinton as the enemy. And, of course, the Greens are going, well, hell yeah, she is! And praying for her to fall down. I don't know, maybe break a hip or something. Yeah, see, that's the same. Yeah, same, Carol. Carol says, I was taught that praying for harm to come to somebody else was evil. Then again, I think it's a pretty fair guess that while Rick Wiles thinks he's serving the Prince of Peace, he's actually doing the bidding of, you know, Old Scratch. Etch a homo. He called him a homo. No. So we got that. And it is after all demon season. Duck season, wabbit season, demon season. Demon season. I think that's something that you get over there next to your pucker butt hot sauce that Jay Cruzen sent me. Yeah, I know. I'm a bad hombre. Wait a minute. Bad hombre. Sounds so much better with the reverb and the echo and everything. Brother Deacon Gerald says, hey, Bob, since the GOP is the party of God and all, using that logic, it would seem that Trump is God's will and the Christians just need to shut the hell up and accept his choice. You know, God works in mysterious ways and all that stuff. Yeah, right. Okay. You're working for that one, Marty. Marty says, obligatory Star Trek reference. Maybe we had a case of Janice Lester taking over the body of James Kirk, leaving Kirk in her body and Trump in Hillary's body and Hillary in Trump's. I think I got lost about halfway through, but that does qualify as a... an obligatory Star Trek reference. It's all so confusing.
Alex Jones
booked a guy named Larry Nichols, who is a... I'll be damned, I didn't know that, but yeah, it probably so. Gerald pointing out that demon season requires a special stamp on your license. Would that be? I mean, I know you got to get like your federal duck and goose stamp and stuff. Is that what it is, Gerald? Is it the brimstone stamp for demon season? And can you shoot? Can you use lead shot when shooting over brimstone? I don't know. So Alex
Jones
and Larry Nichols, who was long ago driven absolutely batshit crazy, sprayed roach insane just by the mere mention of the name Clinton. Well, let's just let them take care of this.
I've talked to Special Forces people and Blackwater folks separately that did security details for her in Iraq and other areas, and they said that you'll get on a helicopter in a car or whatever, and then she won't even talk to anybody unless she's cussing at you, and that she'll almost like a robot just switch off. She'll just switch off and like go into a trance. Did you ever see that, or is that something newer?
And, yeah, when would he? Oh, never mind. Let's just enjoy the ride.
No, I mean, she would just wig out. Alex, I'm just going to tell you the one thing you know about it.
Now, is he deliberately mocking Alex Jones?
I mean, Alex Jones talks to him like this, and he replies like this, and that...
That's not nice.
I had to justify her going out to L.A. about every 4 to 6 weeks to a witch's church. Finally, when it got so bad, I had to confront her. I said, Hillary, at least for show, at least for public show, if we get caught, you're going to have to stand up. I know you go to Methodist church, stand up and say you believe in God. She turned away from me, Alex. Never will forget it.
She turned away.
She started to step away from me. She kind of tilted her head back and said, you know, I can't do that.
And she did all of this inside the teeny tiny little itsy bitsy microscopic mind of Larry Nichols. I mean, does somebody have the Chesterfield unfiltered cigarette concession over at InfoWars or Prison Planet or Plinket or what?
Why do they all talk like this? I don't know. You know I can't do that.
That's haunted me all the years. You know, what did she mean? You know I can't do that. I mean, has she made a deal with the devil? If there's ever been a person that has made a deal with the devil, I cannot imagine that they would act any different than Hillary Rodham Clinton.
You know, because he's pretty well versed on people. I mean, he has to imagine what it's like when people make deals with the devil. But if anybody's going to make one, he imagines she would make one.
Okay, early running for the bumper as we go into the as we go into Friday on the Front Porch here in about a half an hour. I got Black Magic Woman by Santana, and I got Evil Woman by ELO. Anybody, other suggestions are more than welcome. I know. Poor Carol Baker just walks into the cabin there at Hooterville after a hard day's work, and this is what she's met with. She said, I can't believe anyone from Black Ops would talk to Alex Jones. I can't believe anybody but Blackwater Z Whackin' Finger Hut, whatever. I mean, you talk about an operation. Your Finger Hut, you know, there they are. They're running all these dark wet ops security operations, and they're selling cheap shit on the internet. That's a business model. But we're not done. Shame on me. I didn't even issue the hockey puck warning, did I? Hockey puck, duct tape, lots of it.
She's evil. She's mean. Bill's a good timer. He just wants the perks, buddy. That's all he wants.
I think we've got a hillbilly here. I just heard him say Betty, which is spelled B-U-D-D-Y, but hereabouts it's pronounced Betty. And it's what you call people that you... And if somebody calls you Betty and you ain't never mind no coal with them, you look at them and say, I ain't your buddy. I ain't never mind no coal with you. No, that was the hillbilly Betty. Not B-E-T-T-Y, B-U-D-D-Y, Betty. Woo, hillbillies.
Hillary is pure, deep, evil, mean. Meaner than anything you've ever come in contact with. There's not a wild animal in Africa that will attack you.
What would you say, at a spiritual level... At this level, fighting her and picking up on this stuff, it's nauseating. I can't look at her. I'm really sick of her. I mean, she's a damn demon. And it seemed to really get to them that I called.
Meanwhile, he has no problems looking at a guy who's roughly the same color as a Cheeto. And I don't know, has shredded banana peel on his head or something. That's not sickening at all. But looking at a 68-year-old grandmother, nauseating.
Nauseating, I'm telling you, nauseating.
Well, you know, all because she's... The devil!
Them demons.
Well, it would. She's sensitive to that. But I'll tell you this, ask anybody that's ever been around her about the odor.
Let's talk about the odor, because... I've had Secret Service say she smells like, basically, like rotting meat. I said, what's it smell like? And a guy joked and goes, you know, crap. They go, no. He said the other word, S-H, you know what? And they go, no, like rotting meat. We're all like, ugh. Then I talked to Dolly Kyle. She said, worst smell, dirtiest she's ever seen, just totally filthy all the time. Had to be around her for years. And then I talked to their chef. He said, yeah, I never got really close, but they say she stinks really bad. Obama, I've been told, smells like rotting meat. Now, the Bible says this is what demons smell like. I just keep getting told they smell like hell. Tell us, Larry.
It's a multi-million dollar broadcast operation.
Not saying, just saying.
But it, and, And all over America, there are people who tune in and go, yes, yes, I bet she does. It's the Lord of the Flies. That's why it's called the Lord of the Flies. Okay, the votes are coming in. We've got Witchy Woman by the Eagles is also out there. Yes, Gerald points out, yes, the federal brimstone stamp or demon damage stamp is required. I believe you have to use special Trinity ammunition. It only comes in 5.56 NATO rounds. Black Magic Woman would be a good choice, he says. Alex Jones better watch his ass talking about Hillary like that. She'll put a hex or a curse or something on him. Carol Baker is a giver. And consequently finds the silver lining. If old Alex can't stand the look of her, it's going to be a long 4 years for Alex Jones. Or maybe 8. Or maybe there'll be a stroke involved. I mean, I'm not praying or anything like that good Christian Rick Wiles is or nothing. No. Mighty Mouse, yes. Witchy Woman, the Eagles. Isn't it fun playing DJ? It's a real hoot. Hoghead, I don't know. Sympathy for the devil. Yeah, I get it, but there's no sympathy going on over here. Oh, but wait, there's more. So when last we checked in, they all smell like rotting meat.
You're talking to the guy. The first time I met her, she was all dirty, filthy, dirty hair, wearing a muumuu. Flip-flops, and she smelled horrible. Well, I thought it was because of her hygiene. Later, as she started getting cleaned up and dressed up, there is an odor around that woman that if you're within 10 rows of her, if you have any kind of smell sense at all, you're going to smell her. And it is. It's hard to describe. Rotting meat, just rotten. It's just a rotten smell.
Well, I know the Secret Service people, look scared. They said, listen, she's scary. I know they're all making jokes about it, but everybody that works around her, it's in the WikiLeaks, knows that this woman is like Linda Blair.
And it was just a couple of days ago we had a Linda Blair. Let's see. That was Scott and Punky in San Diego, I think, with the Exorcist reference. Here's a question, though. If she smells like rotting meat, what kind of hex is she putting on? Donald Trump has said, it's not exactly like he's operating with a filter. You'd think he'd mention the rotting meat part. Or, maybe... so what? Was it arranged so that Chris Wallace was like upwind or something? I mean, I'm kind of stymied here. How do you not notice something like that? Yeah, as Carol points out, what it is you're put off by the smell of sanity, boys. Sanity. There we go. That kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Kind of a way lot of sense. But that, that's not all we got. Ooh, no, that's esoteric, Gerald. That's very esoteric. What about Marie Laveau by Bobby Bear? Well, now, that's rather interesting. Maybe a little too oblique. I don't know. So then, yeah, from one gravel-throated chain smoker to another, We move westward to the San Francisco Bay Area, where we get the Savage Wiener.
Savage.
And, you know, the Savage Wiener, he's a rational guy. He doesn't go in for all your mumbo jumbo and your hoodoo and your voodoo and your witches and your demons and stuff. No. It's a lot more prosaic and at the same time a lot more disgusting. Just disgusting. Just saying.
Look, yesterday a big publication came out in the National Enquirer from a man who worked for you for many years, which says that you had many women lovers while your husband was president. Is that still true? Bring the house down. Tell me it wouldn't bring the house down. Do you still like women in that way? Nothing wrong with it. We're not saying it's morally wrong. We're asking you if you still like women after what your husband did to you. It's like he could even leave it that way now that I think about it. He could say, because your husband continuously wounded your pride by having everything with a pulse in the Oval Office, we understand that you were injured by that. Do you still like women in that way, or is that all false? Do you care to address those allegations? Now, Meatloaf Jr. would have a stroke on the stage. He'd lose control of it. What would happen for Donald is anyone's guess. My guess is the audience would love it, meaning you.
Mm-hmm. Because, see, Michael Savage broadcasts with one hand under the desk. And, I mean, he's absolutely fascinated with this personal vision he has of Hillary Clinton locked in some sort of torrid lesbian embrace, you know, the love that dare not speak its name. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, and all of this is just catch-up work. These are the masturbatory fantasies of the right wing, with which, surprisingly, a number of people who consider themselves to be part of the left tacitly agree. I know. Gerald says, but really, how do these fuckheads get nationally syndicated radio shows? Because the for-profit media in this country, and I think it's a case of both projection and protection. The for-profit media in this country are owned by right-wing billionaires and corporate conglomerates that are owned by right-wing billionaires. So necessarily, the people on right-wing radio or on terrestrial radio are constantly talking about how the media are, you know, controlled by the left, which is absolute, utter horseshit, especially where broadcast is concerned. But they do that the same way that the magician will have you watch the left hand while the right hand is relieving you of, you know, your wallet. It's a matter, I think that's the answer. I mean, Malloy was on terrestrial radio for years and kicked ass in the ratings. Ratings had nothing to do with him leaving the air. The political ideology of management, as I understand the story, did. And even in my brief sojourn in America's fifth smallest radio market, in which, over the course of a year and a half, I tripled that station's ratings, that wasn't enough. Because when you start calling out the mountaintop removal people, away you go. So, I mean, I guess that's sort of an answer, Gerald. They get nationally syndicated radio shows because media ownership wants them to have nationally syndicated radio shows. My God, how much money has been lost over the years, paying $50 million a year to people like Flush Flimball. And, you know, the life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job. I mean, you cannot sell enough vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls to make that shit profitable. Best answer I got. I don't know. You got better? So, I mean, that's a start. It's only 14 minutes before the hour, and we've still got $15 left to go to meet Ralph's challenge, which will take us down to only $440 to go to finish the week good. But let's walk away for a minute. Let's walk away from the... from the political campaign, sort of. I had no idea that Texas State University was as big as it is. +38,000 students at Texas State University. They're in San Marcos, Texas. A little ways... between San Antonio and Austin. Looks like a lovely, lovely neck of the woods, or, well, actually, Black Earth Prairie. Springs, beautiful springs arise in the area. It is quite possibly one of the longest continuously inhabited areas in North America. Artifacts from the Clovis culture have been found there, making it a sort of archaeologically sensitive area. And we all know I love me some archaeology. But by traditional, common, accepted dating standards, the presence of Clovis artifacts means that, you know, you've got at least about 10,000 years of human habitation there, during which there's been some degree of human evolution. And human evolution at Texas State University just took a big step backwards. Yeah. Dr. R. John McGee is an anthropology and archaeology professor at Texas State University. He does things like leading summer research trips into Chiapas in Mexico, and he's got a summer program that he does in Canterbury in the UK. And a big part of the focus of his expertise is Latin American cultures. He studied with the and lived among the Maya people. And among other things, he teaches a class called cultural anthropology. Cultural anthropology is, well, one of my favorites. Studying all those cultures not like one's own. Teasing out sort of notions of our common human heritage. Understanding the broad human experience by examination and studies of unique unique human societies. And it's, you know, it's one of those classes you take as an undergrad. You know, cultural anthropology is like, you know, maybe there's anthropology 1, which is intro to anthropology, and then, you know, anthropology like 3, cultural anthropology. Maybe New World Anthropology, Old World Anthropology, yada, yada, yada. I had them all. But sooner or later, you're going to have to deal in any form of anthropology. You're going to have to deal with human origins. And so it was this past Tuesday, there on the campus of Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas, in Dr. McGee's cultural anthropology class, that he made a statement that is absolutely non-controversial among people with functioning brains, to wit, that the entirety of modern humanity arises in Africa and spreads therefrom. There are no appreciably separate strains of human beings. You get human beings as human beings around 200,000 years ago in Africa. This is what I was taught. And then, you know, 100 millennia or so later, they begin leaving Africa. Not all of them. I mean, we're talking about we're not talking about humanity as we presently understand it. We're not talking about, I mean, there's no sedentary agriculture. It's all pretty much hunting and gathering. And the roots, by virtue of the examination of the human genome and mitochondrial RNA or DNA, can't remember, pretty much map how everybody left. That's why you wind up with fascinating places like the Caucasus area, which some humans pretty much had to go through in order to spread into Europe. You've got the fascinating story of how people migrated and eventually wound up being the Aboriginal peoples of Australia, who are, as a population, are the longest uninterrupted human population on the planet. I'm probably not saying that right, but it close enough for government work. The ongoing discussion of the how humanity came to the Western Hemisphere. Kind of settled, but not really. But it all starts in Africa. And by the way, in case you're wondering, that drives some white people crazy. It particularly drives white evangelical Christians right plumb out of their trees. Because, see, the essence, I mean, remember, the Scopes monkey trial arises in Tennessee in the early part of the 20th century, ostensibly over the teaching of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. But this is also the Dayton, Tennessee, of an era when Jim Crow and Southern apartheid are in their flower. And what drove the white people crazy, the white Christians, what drove them absolutely bonkers, was the idea that by virtue of humanity descending from previous primates in Africa, that somehow or another, all those good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christians were related to the black folks upon whose necks they were keeping their boots for all they were worth. And so to this day, when you hear some white person say, "I ain't kin to no monkey," what they're actually objecting to is the idea of a common source humanity that did not start out lily white. And so, Tuesday, in a cultural anthropology class at Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas, in Hays County, Texas, Professor McGee said that all modern human life comes from Africa. At this point in time, precious little God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Texas children began getting up and walking out of Dr. McGee's classroom. Justine Lundy, 20 years old, one of the students, said, when he said that, it was dead silent. And then finally a student said, "Sure." But the students, not all of them, white ones, religious ones, got up and walked out, not just on a lesson in cultural anthropology, they walked out on science. They walked out on reasoning. They walked out on logic. Not just Dr. R. John McGee. They walked out on learning. They walked out on the very purpose for which they are at Texas State University in Hays County, San Marcos, Texas. Why does this matter? Just one little college campus? I suppose if you view it just as one little college campus, it doesn't. If, on the other hand, you view this through the lens of the ongoing assault on the idea of learning and of intellect in this country, it is evidence. It is evidence of our backward slide and our downward spiral from our origins, flawed though they were, in the Enlightenment, down a path of ignorance today and a future that could very well be darkness. I just saw that story and I felt like it deserved to be reported. Because there's a larger movement in this country that says that knowledge is bad, that thinking is bad, that science is bad. It's not just climate science that right-wingers reject. It's the essential understanding of the human condition. Consider a Reuters Ipsos poll that came out today.
According to the findings of that poll, 70% of Republican respondents said that if Hillary Clinton wins, it will be because of illegal voting or vote rigging. 70% of Republicans say that if Hillary Clinton wins the presidential election, it will be because she stole it, or that it was stolen for her. I'll say it, I ought not have to, but I'll say it, that the vast majority of that 70% is white, 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 white. And when they talk about illegal voting, they're talking about illegal voting by, you know, those people, like that one in our White House. On the other hand, 70% of Democrats surveyed said, well, you know, if Trump wins, he wins. And way less than 50% said it would have anything to do with vote rigging. When in fact, the Democrats would be more accurate in saying, yeah, that would have an impact on it because of all the goddamn draconian, deliberate voter ID, voter suppression laws that exist in our country and have sprung up like mushrooms after a spring rain in the wake of the, what was it, Shelby County decision of the John Roberts Supreme Court of a couple of years ago, in which John Roberts declared that there is no longer any racism in America, and therefore the Confederacy is free to try to start, and not just try, but free to start suppressing black votes again. Only 60% of the Republicans surveyed say they're confident that their vote will be counted accurately. Now, this is before the first vote has been counted. Some have been cast, but not counted. As I noted a couple of nights ago, you've already got people fainting, standing in line for hours on end in Georgia to try to early vote. But the thing here is that the damage has already been done. Donald Trump says he'll accept the outcome of the election if he wins. And what if he doesn't? Well, according to the Toronto Star, let me introduce you to Jim Mosley of Greenville, South Carolina. He calls himself a Christian soldier. And he says, once the trucks stop rolling, the grocery shelves will go empty and gasoline rationing will go into effect. Liberals will have targets on their backs as their behaviors are pretty much evident. Race wars will begin as well, as your skin color will be your uniform. Let's see. Over on Twitter, an individual by the name of Patrick Stein said, anyone that votes for her should be put on trial for treason. This is why she can never be let into any office of the U.S. other than the one at the Clinton Correctional Facility. Then, off to the gallows. And the Jill Stein voters went, yes! Catch the part about anyone that votes for her should be put on trial for treason? Did you catch the part about your skin color will be your uniform? Yeah, see,
the people who think that the election is in the bag for Donald Trump, if only all those Negroes wouldn't vote illegally and all those raping Mexicans, they've got a shit ton of guns. It's already so weird and squirrely in Denver that its 350 election judges have been required to complete active shooter training. You know, what to do at your polling place if the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammosexual Republicans decide to contest the election with firearms. This has been a miserable election season. Wretched is a word that I keep seeing in fairly common use with regard to this election. And it would be easy to fall back and say, well, yeah, I mean, you know, you got the most disliked Republican candidate and the most mistrusted Democratic candidate. And listen, it wouldn't be sunbeams, violets, and unicorn farts if Bernie was the nominee, okay? That's not the locus of the problem. The locus of the problem is in the pissed off, vicious, gunned up, dumbed down, white wing Republican voting base that no one on the GOP side will dare to condemn. Right? You think? There you go, Carol Baker. I'm a child of God and I knows my rights. And I ain't got to sit around talking about, listen to no egghead professor go on about how I'm related to a monkey and done come from Africa. Look, I'm white. Ain't no way anybody related to me ever come from Africa. That's why we got to take our country back and vote for Trump. I wish this was a joke. It ain't. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Gerald. He said he'll finish off Ralph's challenge. So that means we have $440 to go to finish the week out. Been a tough week here in Mount Colby Gone. $440 to go, one at 440, two at 220, 220, 225, whatever it takes. It's a joke. 4 at 110, 8 at 55, 16 at 2750. I just hope we can somehow knock this down. Oh, by the way, had a lovely note earlier today. I love sharing these. Got a note that said, "Dearest Bob," subject line, "new member of the Horn family. I recently signed on as a monthly subscriber to your show. I came to the Horn via Mike Malloy and haven't missed a show for the last few months. I've quickly come to know and love the wonderful circle of folks that phone in from night to night and enjoy the conversations immensely. I appreciate your wit and wisdom, too, as well as your good humor, word-knowing, and obvious compassion for humans everywhere. It's people like the Horn family that keep me from giving up on humanity altogether, especially during this shit show of an election. I'd like to send a special little shout out to Cletus." Oh, there's a good girl. That's a sweet little girl. Cletus is such a good baby. "And Punky, whose chirpy musings are always spot on. I speak bird, by the way," she says. "Glory. Signed, Kitty from Boston, a solidly blue state where I do not have to cast a vote for the devil." Exactly. Thank you, Kitty. Lovely to hear from you. I really do. I love little affirmations of our little community culture we've built here. Note coming in from a member of the Fraternity of Steve, subject line political anthropology. I can't imagine this happening in your typical school classroom a generation or so ago, talking about what happened at Texas State. Even the nervous white Christians then would have kept their seats and complained privately. One question. What sort of person takes the class and doesn't expect this sort of situation or revelation to come up? It would be interesting to know if any of the little darlings thus offended were anthropology majors. Regards, Steve in China. It sure didn't happen when I was taking any of these classes. Of course, that was a million years ago, and I was riding my dinosaur to class every day there on at either Harvard on Stinson or Harvard on the Mon. Nobody walked out. Some people did try to challenge or discuss it, and you know they weren't smacked or hit, but it's quietly. You know, taught. It's kind of like a conversation I had with the admission clerk at a hospital the other day. Something I don't know. I forget how it happened, but there was a discussion of like Family Guy, and she said, "I can watch it as long as it doesn't get too raunchy." I said, Family Guy's nothing but raunchy. And she said, well, no, what I mean is I can take it as long as they're not saying bad stuff about God. And see, that's the thing. If you say anything about you know, humans being anything except the direct descendants of Adam and Eve, you're saying bad stuff about God. I can't imagine, Steve, that that the people walking out were anthropology majors. Or if they had thought, or maybe they thought, I mean, cultural anthro, that's like sophomore year, isn't it? It's one of those things that'll check off a box in the core curriculum. I can't imagine. What'll be interesting is now that Steve refers to them as the little darlings, precious little darlings. God bless them. Love their hearts. They can't help it. What'll be interesting now is to when this blows up into a right wing pout rage, and they try to destroy the career of Dr. McGee, because that's next on the script. You realize that? Because he wasn't sensitive to their religious rights to be ignorant. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus. The fundraising goal is now down to 400. And $30. $430 to go. Thank you very kindly. Nurse Cletus is such a good girl, and she's not thundering or nothing, so she doesn't have nothing to be afraid of. No, she's a good puppy. Right. So it's time for Friday on the Front Porch. I've over-filibobstered just a wee bit. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, you are missing out on a big treat. Because it's a lot of fun. If you've never participated before, by all means, just fire up your Skype and on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, one word. And he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and turn on the Bob signal for you. If you have to have regular telephony to join the group, we got one number for you. 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. And that will get you into the Horn Molloy Skype chat group Friday on the Front Porch Conversation. Easy as can be. I had a question from Jim a little bit ago. That wasn't really Jill Stein singing, was it? Yes, that was really Jill Stein singing. I know. These things happen. All right, break time. We're firing up the front porch infrared. Come on up. Grab that jug with the corn cob stopper in it. Grab a little swig off that. Careful, it's about 130 proof, but it burns blue. Or just a nice, on a night like this, warm cup of chamomile tea. Try not to doze off in the remainder of the program if you're going to go with the chamomile tea, please. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. My choice. Yeah, that does end kind of cold, doesn't it? But hey, there are a lot of devil options, but my God, there's just it just speaks to my formerly teenage soul, Van Halen running with the devil. You know that thing? I used to have a Rockford Fosgate like 200 watt amp or something like that in my car with some just murderous Polk audio speakers and a subwoofer, and that thing, that song would just about lift that little Porsche 911 right off the road. Long time ago, that Porsche 911. It was a 1987 model, for anybody wondering, with a Targa top. It's Friday on the front porch, though, and let's go check in with the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. If you want in on the stress line, it is open at the moment. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
Don't scare me like that.
I'm not scaring you. I just have to hit the button like everybody else is supposed to be muted.
Crack the whip, Sparky. Crack the whip.
Anyway, it's an awesome day today. 77 degrees.
Shut up, Sparky.
It's clear. I can see the Mount Lassen. There's snow on the mountain.
He's still talking. Because, see, the only reason why he led with that, Bob, is because I pointed out that it's 95 degrees in the valley.
All right. Wait. Tracy. Are we going to start with internal dissension in the Horn family?
Fuck yeah! Because he did that shit on purpose. I got you. I got your number, Sparky. Okay.
Well, it's not my fault you live in Southern California.
Well, that's okay. You just got to shut at Sparky from Gerald too. So apparently we're back in the season now.
It was like I was all excited the other morning. I woke up and I actually had to wear a sweater. So I was like, yay, it's fall for real. And now triple digit heat still. And it's like it's almost 5 o'clock and it's fucking 95 degrees. And it didn't help. It didn't help that I read this story. And because I had to put this story in because I'll forget. And this is an actual hockey puck moment, you guys. So I don't know if you guys have talked about this or anything, but there's a petition out because there's some people that felt that Clarence Thomas was shunned because he's not in the African American Museum.
Is Thurgood Marshall?
I'm pretty sure Thurgood Marshall is.
Okay, so Thurgood Marshall's dead. That makes getting Clarence in the criteria pretty quick, pretty easy.
Right. Right, no, but they're mad, and you know, there's an actual petition, and guess who brought the petition? The petition is being launched from Stand United website, so you know me, because I research shit, so I clicked on the hyperlink to see who Stand United is, and guess what, petition by, ready, Megan Thomas. Isn't that Mrs. Clarence Thomas?
No, that's, she's Virginia.
Okay, but she's, whoever Megan Thomas is, she's from Reston, Virginia. And so, you know, they're really upset because he's such a fine, upstanding African-American. Look at here. Now, y'all realize that Clarence Thomas hasn't been black for 40 years, right? He doesn't even want to be black. So why should he be included in anything that has to do with black people? Has anybody been to the museum yet? Because is there an Uncle Tom section in the African-American?
Tracy starting out Friday on the front porch bringing the high heat.
It's 95 degrees here, Bob. I can't help but bring high heat. It is fucking hot. And it's October. And it's just wrong on so many levels. But seriously, I mean, listen to this petition. Are you ready for this? Curators of the museum singled out Thomas due to his unique views on race and his conservative thought that the federal government is the greatest threat to our individual liberties. The museum highlights people of less noble endeavors. Bob, again, I can't speak.
I got nothing.
I can't speak to who's in the museum. But that this bitch said that they of less noble endeavors to this man. again, you know me, I'm not hot on...
Well, you know, that that Frederick Douglass and that W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, that, and even that Booker T. Washington, they're all overhyped when it comes to, you know, Clarence. And the
right,
Coke
right.
I mean, if we put Clarence in, does the Coke can and the pube come too?
Right, right, exactly. Now, there is, apparently there is a mention of him in museum, but only because Anita Hill.
Oh, wait, Anita Hill. That's got a sting.
That has to sting. So it's like, they go on to saying, lesser endeavors, I can't imagine who, of less noble endeavors, and it is unfathomable, I can't even say it, to think the curators were not open-minded enough to include all historically significant African Americans, no matter their political beliefs. It's time to call museum director Lonnie Bunch III to include American leaders and conservative thinkers such as Justice Thomas. Now, I'm pretty sure Booker T is in the museum, but Booker T, yes, he was a conservative, but he had, you know, now that the history books have really delved into Booker T. Washington's motives and to what, you know, the way he was thinking, it is understandable. And even his, later.
Well,
life,
I know that the common thinking was that Booker T. Washington was kind of a sellout.
No, he wasn't.
I mean, he was that one address to the Atlanta. Oh, what was the name of it? Either bring us with you or we will drag you down.
Right. Right. Right.
You know, that right. wasn't an appeal to separatism. Of course, I'm real white, so what do I know? But that sound, you know, from here looking backwards, it kind of sounds prophetic.
Exactly. Abso-fucking-lutely.
Hey, Bob. I've got some background on Ms. Thomas, the professor, or whoever the hell she is.
Not whoever the hell. Oh, wait, don't do that. Whoever the hell she is.
Well, it might be helpful to gauge her intentions and her where she's coming from. Apparently the so-called news outlet, conservativenewsservice.com, CSNnews.com, was founded by L. Brent Bozell.
Our old buddy L. Brent Bozell.
Yeah, and he. Strangely enough, he lives in Reston also. Maybe it's his roommate. Who knows? And there's nothing in here about her, but that connection alone should give you a sense of where this notion is coming from regarding their feelings about...
Yeah, I mean, L. Brent Bozell was one of the people who got the vapors and had to go to the fainting couch over Janet Jackson and the nipple of doom, wasn't he?
Oh, Mike, he's that one of those people?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, he's been around. See, and you know, these when I talk about these people of his ilk and some of these other has-been right-wing movers, shakers, and pundits, you know that when they die, when they no longer become mainstream relevant, where do they go? Not to heaven, not to hell. They go to Trump TV. You know that's where all this is headed.
Yeah. Now, so people, the petition was saying that it's going to hurt black folks. We're going to be upset that he's not in the museum. And most of the people, the responses are hilarious. Like, really? No, not upset. It is not, you know, if anything, it's going to keep me from... I can't even imagine, and this is that privilege thing. It's like, you know, really? Clarence Thomas?
Well, and this is my point, Tracy. This is, see, you will know them by their fruits. Now, I'm not a Christian anymore by any stretch of the imagination. I came to my senses. Thank whoever may or may not be up there. I have nothing against Christians, especially progressive Christians, but I just... you know, prefer not to spend my time having ongoing conversations and begathon sessions with an invisible entity. Okay, that's just me. Okay, but by their fruits you shall know them. It's these people, basically their modus operandi is to minimize and discredit and discount anything that ain't conservative. And Clarence Thomason is an example, but I don't know of any museum he ought to be part of, especially one that celebrates the decent black culture and contribution to our otherwise wretched society. He should be, if he's in there at all, it ought to be in the wing that has to do with Toms, if you will.
Yeah, like I said, Uncle Tom, what was it, you know, who watched Boondocks? You know?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got it. So, what was Uncle Ruckus?
Uncle Ruckus. Oh, my goodness. You know, yes, Uncle Ruckus.
If there's going to be an exhibit, I mean, like, or somebody said, well, if there's a Boondocks exhibit, then Uncle Ruckus is already there. We already got our Uncle Tom. We don't need any more. I mean, but what tickles me are, you know, so I got this story from The Grill, which is, you know, an African-American website that focuses on...
That's the African-American, you know, Huffington Post, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. You know, and so...
Wait a minute, did you say The Grill, like barbecue grill?
Grio, G-R-I-O.
Okay, see, I was like, now we're going to... mix in a little bit of food porn.
Oh, you were okay. So you were waiting for Todd to call in, and we were just going to go full on pecan wood.
Well, no. It's The Griot, and The Griot is a storyteller.
Yeah, I knew that. I was just kidding around.
Oh, you were trying to be funny. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Sometimes white humor is completely lost on me. I try. It's like watching British humor. It's like, wait, was that supposed to be funny? Okay, I get you. Barbecue.
No, don't you be dissing. I mean, on Monty Python and.
Oh no, I love Monty Python. Python.
That's great British humor. I had a friend who I tried to explain Monty Python to, and he just looked at me. Oh God, he just didn't get it, and it made me weep real tears.
You know, I know. And it's like, but what's so funny is you look at the, you know, if you look, you go and find this story on The Grill and you read the comments from the black folks going, yeah, no, we're not at all upset about him. And, you know, that's when somebody brought up Uncle Ruckus and Uncle Tom and stuff like that. So then you go to the website where the petition is on and they're like, you know, Justice Thomas holds the original tent of the Constitution that has made the United States of America the greatest country in the world. Because, you know, Justice Thomas is an excellent jurist. He's an example of all. Now, Bob, correct me, because see, this is where I...
How would anybody know? He's hardly ever opened his mouth.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, you think of, you know, even, you think of, like, you know, oh my God, Thurgood Marshall. They were so mad when he got appointed because they're like, this Negro he has opinions, he's going to talk.
Oh, no, Richard Nixon hated Thurgood Marshall.
Oh,
there's a possibly apocryphal story out there. Later in life, Thurgood Marshall had some health issues. And during the Nixon presidency, he was hospitalized. And... Nixon posted like a Secret Service guard outside his door. And according to the story, Thurgood Marshall took a piece of paper and a pen and wrote something on it and folded it up and handed it to one of the Secret Service agents and said, take that to your boss. And apparently when Nixon opened it, it just said, not yet. Hey, let me run over to the Skype line and or not Skype line, over to the stress line and see who we got on the phone end of things. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome all to Andy.
Oh, hey Andy, how are you?
Live and functioning.
Every day above the dirt's a good one. So
yeah, dead air.
So I do have to ask. I mean, You responded with a Czech toast the other night at the end of one of your emails. Have you been to the beer spa, Andy? I know you've been over there. Have you been to the beer spa?
No.
Oh. I got to have an on the ground report from somebody who's been to the Czech Republic and been to the beer spa.
Oh. Where is it?
They've sprung up all over the Czech Republic. I mean, they're in Pilsen and you know, Prague and a couple of other areas, and they put you in a nice warm 110 degree beer bath, and then they hand you a nice cool cellar temperature beer to drink, and then you get a rub down on a hops mattress, and it's just a happy day.
Now, well, my question about the beer spa
Scott.
Okay.
Yeah. Go, Andy.
I haven't been on a vacation since I lost my job about 6 years ago and haven't been able to get back on my feet. So, me getting to the Czech Republic, if I do ever get there again, I'll probably stay permanently.
Well,
can't blame me on that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of good press coming out of there.
Need workers bad. The economy is supposedly doing very well.
What kind of workers?
They have a very low unemployment rate.
What kind of workers?
Well, a lot of it looks like it probably is manufacturing type jobs.
That's not so bad.
Evidently, the economy is doing well. You know, they're not in the they're in the EU, but they're not an EU currency country, and they do very well on trade. You know, unlike our country, which we don't benefit from the free trade, they do because they're a net exporter big time because of the low wage environment.
So
that has upward, and they keep the crown, the Czech currency, the koruna, very low. And they've had that currency policy of keeping the currency low. So that makes their goods very inexpensive.
And how about the cost? I mean, cost of living, I mean, with a, is it an undervalued currency?
It's a what kind of currency?
I said, is it undervalued?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's been the policy of the Czech bank. I think the guy, was his name? Fisher? Something like that. The guy who was head of the Czech bank had that policy to keep the koruna low. Artificially low, and they kept on printing more money, and it's worked. It's enabled them to keep a well-distributed middle class.
What kind of social safety net system?
Well, it's nice to have government-sponsored health care for one thing.
Well, hear, hear.
That's one thing you don't have to worry about. The education system, as long as you could get in, was free. I think that might have changed some, but it's certainly not as bad as here. So the whole expense structure isn't nearly as bad. You know, here, when you get crushed, you get crushed. There, at least you have something to rely on.
Yeah,
not have to worry about health care, which, of course, can be a killer here.
Yeah.
A lot of people are much ingrained, you know, in that they don't move very much. They're not as mobile as we are. So people are able to keep their houses and summer houses and hand them down. So the housing situation isn't as critical as it can be here, especially like in the area I live in, where the rent rates and the home prices have just skyrocketed.
Yeah, we all remember when Richard pretty much, Richard was in Richmond, and now he's in East Tennessee because he pretty much got Googled right out of his home that he'd lived in for 15, 20 years. And that's, you know, that's not an isolated incident in the Bay Area, is it?
No, not at all. The displacement is rampant here. And the politicians aren't doing anything to address it. The only thing they're doing is building more luxury apartments. It causes more gentrification. It causes more people to be forced out that are lower income. That's their solution. Build luxury apartments. You know, mainly it's private equity firms coming in and just building huge luxury complexes, buildings. It's really something else.
Because capitalism.
Right. As a matter of fact, I was at a city council meeting on Monday, and there are three city council members that were trying to extend the duration of time of their tenure on the city council, an extra 12 months. And the three that were pushing it really hard are the real corporatists, the council, the ones in the bag for the developers.
So what, are they term limited?
No, but their terms were supposed to be 4 years, and they were trying to make it 12 years and have it having happen instantly without having it to be voted upon, except by the city council members themselves. It was something to watch. We did get them to stop that, the people that were there. Amazingly, all the people that came and gave comments to the city council were against them extending their own terms. But there was one individual who spoke for extending the terms, and he had to be a representative of the trade unions who liked the building development that was going on. Hear, hear for the trade unions, helping the gentrification project.
Anything
one,
for a buck,
one
right?
For democracy.
Beautiful. Just, you know.
So anyway, yeah, I did send you an email on Monday, and you only read the bottom part of my email.
Yeah?
I have the front part of it. Mind if I read some of it?
Well, I've got it here in front of me.
Right.
I mean,
I talked about the progressive media hitting a new low, the lack of courage, honesty, bravery.
Yeah.
About the Russians. That's total baloney about the Russians with the emails and them undermining the Democratic Party and the DNC and Ms. Clinton's campaign. I think that's total baloney. You can believe James Clapper, you know, the perjurer-in-chief himself. No, we're not spying on Americans. Coming out of his mouth, please. And those emails, Kevin Gostola has done a great job of outlining what those Clinton emails were all about, the Podesta emails, and a lot about the Goldman Sachs, what's public and what's not public, what's okay for Goldman Sachs, and the way she just loves the revolving door from Wall Street. She just loves those people from Wall Street going into the Treasury and other departments, federal departments. Just an amazing thing to watch. And, you know, I do agree with Jay Cruz, and then maybe it's time to bail out a little until the election's over. And you know, you hit the Green Party pretty hard, Bob, on your show. And you know, there was a Liberty Party in the 1840s with the abolitionists, and probably the Civil War and Emancipation wouldn't happen without that third party, Liberty Party, that transcended and transformed into the Republican Party, and Emancipation came about. And then there was, during the Teddy Roosevelt era, in the Wilson era, you had Eugene V. Debs, the socialist, pushing Teddy to the left so Teddy could do his trust busting. And then Woodrow Wilson also, probably, you know, much lesser extent, because Woodrow Wilson was a pretty hardcore dude and pretty racist. And then
racist through and through.
Yeah. Then you had FDR with Norman Thomas pushing him to the left.
Well,
I mean, third parties provide a vital role in this country in the past.
Well, you know, Lincoln was a Whig. Lincoln was in the, you know, and that's, you know, that's one of the, that's people, for some reason or other, people like to cite Lincoln when they talk about the Greens and third parties. But one of the things that sets Lincoln apart, Andy, is the fact that he actually had governmental experience. He had been a member of the Congress. And he had, you know, as an autodidact, a pretty profound understanding of the workings of government. I don't see that coming out of the Greens. They certainly don't have anybody to carry their banner who has any governmental experience, or else Jill Stein wouldn't be their nominee.
Now they've done a pretty good job in Richmond.
Well, I mean,
California.
I mean, that's
they were running that town for a while.
That's where it and you know what? That's where it has to come from, not top down but bottom up. You can't.
You try doing that within this Democratic Party that does crushes anybody that's not a corporatist, just wipes them out. And you just have to look at what Debbie Wasserman Schultz has done, and what many Democrats do. You know, there wasn't one congressperson in California that supported Bernie. You know, not a one, as left as California is supposed to be. You couldn't find a one. It was rare, of course, that you could find a congressperson anywhere except somebody like Tulsi Gabbard. And as the email shows, they fixed her, you know, fixed her financially as far as getting campaign contributions.
Yeah,
so they will crush you. They will crush you if you don't play along with this, you know, game that they have in the Democratic Party, Bob, isn't what it used to be, and it isn't for working people, bottom line. You're just backing a, you know, a dead carcass, man.
The problem is there's only two parties. I mean, you're not sitting here trying to make an argument that at some point in anything resembling the near future, the Green Party's going to be any kind of a force to be reckoned with, are you?
Hey, Bob, I got to go. My life is over, okay? My life has been over for a long time in this country. I'm done. I don't support people that don't support me, and the Democratic Party hasn't. I am done, man, okay? I don't vote for Democrats unless they're a progressive Democrats and unless there's somebody like a Bernie Sanders to support Bernie Sanders. Otherwise, I am done, all right?
So, have a great weekend.
Enjoy the football games. I know West Virginia's kicking some donkey out there. I hope they keep it up, right?
We got TCU. Later. We got TCU on Saturday. Yeah. But,
that was interesting.
But the fact remains that the Green Party is not going to do anything. And you know what? I agree with Andy when he says I support progressive Democrats. That's who I support. And they're, at least where I am, they are sadly few and far between. They're not on my ballot very often. I had the closest thing to a progressive candidate in the primary, and I supported him. And he lost because you had a progressive Bernie guy, and you had a former U.S. attorney, middle-of-the-road Clinton guy, and you got Jim Justice. And if the middle-of-the-road Clinton guy would have gotten out, the progressive Bernie guy very possibly would have won the nomination. And so I get the gripes about the Democratic Party, but I also understand that you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And you know what? The citations that Andy makes about, you know, the Liberty Party, the Know-Nothings, the Eugene V. Debs, all of that. You know, they stuck Eugene V. Debs in prison. For being, you know, for not playing along. By virtue, you know, Roosevelt had largely gone around the bend by 1912, and his third party candidacy probably did cost Taft re-election. But here's the thing, that simply proves the point. And it is, you know, it's like a law of political nature. Third parties harm the party that they are most nearly aligned with. So Teddy Roosevelt was his Bull Moose Party was most nearly aligned with the Republicans, and that harmed the Republicans, allowing Woodrow Wilson to get in. Okay. Ralph Nader did not cause the 2000 election. But Ralph Nader's candidacy was most ideologically nearest to the Democratic platform, so consequently, it did harm to the Democratic candidate. In 1992, Ross Perot was most nearly aligned in his independent candidacy to the GOP, so he did harm to George H.W. Bush, allowing Bill Clinton to become president. I mean, American political history is full of this.
It's full of something. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
The Greens aren't going to... I'm hard on the Greens because the Greens don't live in reality. The only way the Greens ever come to prominence is if the Democratic Party outright dies. Just like the Democratic Party fell apart in 1860 because the Northern Democrats and the Southern Democrats couldn't agree on a nominee because of the issue of slavery, and that allowed the Republicans to sneak in under the radar. There was nobody more surprised than Abraham Lincoln when Abraham Lincoln won. And the Republican nomination, too, for that matter. But
yeah,
the
see, that's when I love it. Oh,
go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, it's like when you said about, you know, Abraham Lincoln, and, you know, I love how Republicans are always quick to bring up that Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. Not your kind of Republican, you know. Well, a Republican freed the slaves, but, Abraham Lincoln, you know, the Republicans were the party of Lincoln, and I'm like, that's where I just kind of step back and walk away because, you know, that's when I start getting all, you know, angry black women and I start yelling at the top of my lungs and then to what? It's like jousting at windmills. They're not going to listen. These people that, you know, have this thing, you know, it's like no matter what you say, no matter how you say, well, yeah, he was a Republican. However, it doesn't matter. That's where they go to it, or when they use, you know, Martin Luther King speeches as well. It's like, oh, gross. You sniveling, just gross people that using these people. You know, I don't know. I start getting upset. I start stuttering and I can't find my words. So that's why I count on people like you.
Well, I'm not speaking for anybody but myself, Tracy. I think everybody understands that. But I don't know what the Greens hope to accomplish. And frankly, within progressive circles, they have probably received more discussion than they really merit. Because they're not a force to be reckoned with. They don't even show up on the political radar in this country. Which means that if they ever hope to be anything, they got a hell of a lot more work to do.
Well, it's like what you were saying about how, okay, don't come out, you know, full blaze and thinking you're going to be elected president of the United States, you know, or even have a fighting chance when nobody knows who you are. Start off at, you know, like you said, running for local office, running for state office, running in places like you say in, you know, Mississippi or, you know, wherever, where they will never elect a Democrat, no matter how good, you know, how well their platform is, you know, written out or what have you. These are the places where, you know, you can start on, you know, grassroots and start and work your way up. But these people, you know, like you said, they come out every 4 years, and for what? Just, you know, and then you get these people, you know, that, you know, jail now heal. And, you know me, Bob, I don't like getting into, you know, these discussions on Facebook because it just doesn't matter because it does, you know, these people aren't going to listen. But I had to one day about, look, you know, all that aside of jail now heal and stuff like that. But when you're talking about not voting for somebody like Hillary Clinton because of whatever the reason may be, and you're either talking about not voting or voting for Jill Stein or voting for, what's the fool's name, Johnson?
Never feel the Johnson.
Never feel, that's so, oh my God, that's, you got to think, you know.
Hands off my Johnson.
Stop it. The only thing I have to think of is what is going to happen to people who look like me. And yes, okay, if I'm being selfish, I'm sorry, but I have people that look like me in, you know, just, you know, I'm black, I'm a woman, you know, I'm a lesbian. I have a, you know, black male, you know, family members. There's a true worry of what will happen if Donald Trump becomes president, because you think it's open season now on us. It's going to be like, wow, you know, you got this fool talking about how, you know, stop and frisk should be the law of the land. They don't care. They talk about, you know, when all, you know, they talk about black people, you know, in inner cities, and that's, and, you know, I should vote for him. Why? Because, you know, black people's lives are hell anyway, and nothing better than a white savior coming in and telling us how to live, because, you know, he's going to make it all better. I was talking to a friend of mine who is used to work for, was an analyst and wrote program and code for a Department of Defense contractors, black woman and a lesbian. And, you know, we were, and she lives in Inglewood. And I asked her, Inglewood is supposedly, you know, when those inner city parts of Los Angeles that they're talking about. And I asked her, I said, Onetta, I have a question. I said, you know, according to Donald Trump, you live in the inner city. Is your life hell? She's like, gee, let me think. No. I mean, this woman has two advanced degrees. She graduated top of her class from Pomona College with a major in math. Okay. She's one of those people that actually think in math. She has an advanced degree in, I don't know, math. Okay.
Yeah.
She has traveled all over the world, Bob. Like,
no, but it's like that story I had the other night of the public housing community in Watts. Okay, it's
Jordan Downs.
Yeah, Jordan Downs. It's sitting on a damn toxic waste site. Okay, that is living in hell.
That's living in hell.
And you know what? Living in Flint is living in hell. But it's not. It's not because of the ethnic makeup of the community. It's because.
No.
It's because of power brokers like Rick Snyder and the rest of those godless Republicans who decided it would be okay to poison little black kids.
Exactly. That's exactly. If I'm living in the inner city, as you know, and I'm living in hell, it's not because I'm black. No, it's because, like you said, it's because of places like Flint, Michigan, and Jordan Downs, and anywhere where there's no no opportunity other than unless you're an athlete or a musician, and you know, and what are the chances are you're going to become a pro football player or basketball player or ball player, period. So when the only way that you're saying that you can get out of this mess is because, you know, you got to become an athlete, there's nothing about, well, you know, just go to school and become a better and get educated. But when, you know, they put no monies in the schools or after school programs or art or music or any of these other things that make people more well-rounded and able to, you know, advance and go into college, or make it so expensive that even if you're so ill prepared because the school that you went to, you're a student at that school, but you go try to go to college and you're still at, you know, remedial. Because,
well, I
why?
Mean, look, let's be clear. I understand Andy's anger and frustration because I share it. All right.
We all do.
But I also and you know what, supporting progressive Democratic candidates in the primary is a great strategy. And you know, this is the time, like the day after the election is the time to start thinking about who are going to, you know, for people to start thinking about being progressive Democrats in primaries. Okay.
Exactly.
The discussions about who and what the Democratic Party is in the general election is kind of fruitless.
Because it's already done.
I mean, you're down to the two choices you're gonna get, and you know, Jill Stein, Schmilstein. I don't care, and the same for the Johnson and any of the other third party outliers out there. They're not ever going to be president, but they're playing inside what is obviously and absolutely a rigged game, and it is rigged to this extent insofar as, you know, there are all the hoops that you have to jump through in order to get on the ballot. Okay,
right.
So the Greens want 5% of the vote, and they'll have ballot access. But you know what? They're going to have to put forward viable candidates before that's ever going to happen.
I mean, Jill Stein just doesn't. Well, she's the political equivalent of Oakland, California. You know what Gertrude Stein said? There's no there.
She's not even ticking at 1%, Bob. I mean, let's get
right. And that's why I say I'm wasting a hell of a lot of time talking about something that is actually A, pissing people off, and B, hopelessly irrelevant.
And Tracy, I hear you. Self-preservation is an admirable thing. Never feel bad about that.
Oh no, honey, I never feel about self-preservation.
Absolutely, I hear you loud and clear.
Nobody. I don't think anybody is in a nastier political spot than I am. Like with the governor's election here in West Virginia.
Oh, you're in hell.
Look at me.
Yeah.
Pasty-faced, doughy, pink, white guy. I'm the one who's living in hell. Okay. Hello, Donald. You dick. I'm the one in hell over here. I got an ex-Republican running for governor as a Democrat. I got a weirder Republican running as a Republican for governor. And I've got somebody who used to be one of the rising stars of the Democratic Party in this state, who took her blocks and went home, running as an outlier. And you know, I'm sorry if the Mountain Party doesn't like it, but the only thing the Mountain Party can do is hurt the Democratic Party.
Not to mention that it's pulling money out of your and Mike's pocket. People are getting pissed off and leaving you guys. I see it. I see it happening, especially on Mike's end.
I don't know if that's, you know, maybe that's what Andy was alluding to. I don't support people who don't support me. You know, I don't know. Or was he talking about the Democratic Party? I don't know. But
big picture wise, I don't know.
But
didn't Andy say something about he supports progressive Democrats?
In the primaries, yes.
Okay, well, the primaries are over. Look at the ballot, wherever Andy is or was, under the presidential race. Give me the name of your favorite progressive Democrat who's running. You won't find one. So the plan B is to do the thing that will do the least damage to things that progressive Democrats want to have done and the world that they want to see happen. I mean, and Malloy was talking about this. Bob, you have talked about this. People, open your fucking ears and eyes and get what is being said to you by people like Bob and like Mike Malloy. I mean, Jesus, it's that old saying, if you want to send a message, use Western Union. Well, the problem is Western Union doesn't even do telegrams anymore. The best you can do with Western Union is wire money, okay?
And get ripped off for that.
Yeah. So,
oh, yeah, especially if you send it by credit card. Man, they really beat you up.
People who are supposed to be so astute in this conversation, not the one we're having, but the one overall, are irretrievably deaf or blind or ignorant or something, maybe a combination of everything, because they would rather have a little pound, you know, pound my foot, hold my face till I turn blue moment in the election and see it all go to shit. I mean, oh, God, I don't even have words.
Yeah, I know. And that's where it becomes frustrating. You know, one, you know, like what we're dealing with now, it's, you know, we've had a tough few weeks. It seems like we always manage to miracle, and it's not a miracle. It's the determination of people who want independent media. That's the miracle. But we managed to finish the month okay. But we have these great, we get into these great big giant damned holes in the ground and then have to scramble to get out. And, you know, that's not all of the pissed off progressives running away because, you know, maybe Malloy or I aren't ideologically pure enough. Maybe that's some of it, but it's also the fact that it's a political year and all the political contributions suck all the air out of the room. Okay. It every 4 years, I just know it's going to be a hard damn year. And you know, I got 11 years of proof of that behind me. But beyond that, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say this, and you know, I understand that this is what the Greens disagree with. There are not, okay, there are a lot of Americans who, if you ask them the poll question right, they will tell you that they support progressive positions, okay? But then, if you start presenting them candidates, they go, oh, fuck, no, okay? They want progressive positions, they want progressive policies, but they psychotically want them to come from center-right political entities, okay? I guess they want some sort of incrementalism, and it's hard to talk about the country as a whole because the country is not a whole. The country is shattered into a million tiny pieces right now. But just to finish the idea real quick, and I'm not trying to filibobster through the Friday conversation, but
go on.
There are not enough dedicated, work on the ground progressives for us to have some off, you know, playing third party politics and others trying to change the system from within. It's kind of a situation where it's got to be all or nothing.
And right, otherwise we're going to get thrown to the wolves.
Well, yeah, well, Ghana have been. Okay, I mean, this works out great. It works out, I mean, I see, that's why I don't like having conflict with people like Andy. I've known Andy for a really long time, and I know Andy is out there pounding the pavement. I know Andy has an activist spirit and an activist heart, and I know that he gets out there and does what he can. You know, there are a lot of, you know, internet keyboard warriors who just talk this shit and don't do anything. But, you know, the dedicated, it's frustrating to see good energy, good spirit, good efforts, and you know that it's, how do I say this without pissing people off, because I'm not trying to, but you hate to see it wasted.
Well, that leads me to a question, okay, that I think is relevant to the conversation. And Andy wouldn't fit in this category that I'm about to describe based on what you've said about him. My question is, how much of this stuff is sourced in individuals or groups who are plagued by two deficits, and they are youth and inexperience? That is to say, people who have not been around long enough to really see that it's a process. Change is a process. It's not, like I alluded to in an email recently, it's not like gravy train dog food. You pour in a cup of warm water, stir, and it makes its own gravy right in the bowl, and all you have to do is stand there and enjoy the process, you know, the transformation. No, I think back to my youth as a teenager growing up outside of D.C., going to anti-war marches when the Vietnam War was going full tilt boogie, hooking up with a local black minister in my hometown of Alexandria to picket at a cab stand in 68 and 69, just as a teenager, because I saw the injustice even then that the two white cab companies in Alexandria, Virginia, in 1968, 1969, would not hire black drivers. Going to the Poor People's March in the summer of 68, you know, doing everything I could possibly do with what resources I had to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. You know, I keep a tally every 4 years of presidential candidates who I voted for since I first voted in 72, okay? And my loss column is way bigger than my win column, believe me, okay? But I know that it's part of a process. I write to my congresswoman. I write to my two senators. You know, I do what I can to encourage people to do that, because it ain't going to be over until they put you in a box and toss you into the ground, a hole in the ground, okay? It's part of a process. And to have a tantrum, some of these folks, simply because Bernie didn't become the nominee, and simply because Hillary is less than perfect,
Way less than perfect. Way less than perfect.
Yeah, it just boggles the mind that we're willing to risk so much. It's like the 1964 LBJ ads against Goldwater were always tagged with, you know, vote for President Johnson on November, whatever it was. The stakes are too high to stay home. Well, I would amend that. The stakes are too high to throw away your vote, even though you don't see it as throwing away your vote. The net effect is you're voting for Trump by voting for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein.
Scott, they hate that. That drives them absolutely crazy.
Don't tell them how to vote, Scott.
There's a lot of stuff that I hate, Bob, okay? And one of them is people who are plagued with youth and inexperience who like the Dylan song, you don't need a weatherman to tell which way the wind is blowing, okay? They don't even know what field they're on, what the game is, what the rules are, and what the importance of sticking to it is, or are, or something. I mean, it just blows me away. And I'm not that old, okay? But I've been around the planet 62 times. I wish I got frequent flyer miles for my annual trips around the sun, okay? I would take you all somewhere, but I don't. And it makes me weep real tears when I think of the possibility, as remote as it could be, that orange, demented orange circus peanut could be elected the next goddamn president of this country. It just, it boggles the mind.
It don't even have to be that old. Just study up on history. Yeah. If you don't vote for anybody but Hillary, you're succumbing or you're contributing to fascism. Do we really want to repeat or be a part of that? I'm not going down that route. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, the thing that, you know, hey, everybody, how you doing?
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, I'll have a report later on about the concerts. But, you know, the thing about it is that people have this idea that if their first choice, you know, let's say for the nominee, like Bernie, for most of us here, doesn't win, that the game's over, forget it, I'm going to back out, you know, I'm not going to participate. Well, the game never ends. It's not like a frickin' football game that's over in 60 minutes. You know, civic engagement in politics lasts all the time, as long as you're alive. So you've got an obligation to do whatever you can to try and make the country better, you know, as long as you're breathing. And, you know, some of these, you know, spoiled sports or whatever just don't get that. I mean, sometimes your preferred candidate doesn't win, but I think all in all, I think in the long term, the arc of history does tend to swing towards justice, to sort of paraphrase Martin Luther King Jr., you know, and people have just got to realize that, you know, they've got to get out there and do whatever they can. I mean, I never thought I'd do this, but I gave $25 to Hillary's campaign today just because she seems to have found her inner progressive during this campaign. You know?
Well, now let's not go overboard here. I mean,
okay.
Forklift.
Am I telling people how to vote here?
she's got a fucking forklift, the biggest you can buy, probably made in China.
I know.
Scraping up money from corporate entities. So, if you want to do something useful with your money, send it to Bob. Jesus, come on.
Well, speaking of that, where are you, Bob, on fundraising? I had to take a call from Laura. She's in New York interviewing for a job at Sloan Kettering. So
I'm sorry, what? I can't hear you. I'm way down here in this hole, Rick.
Oh, really? Okay. How bad? 400 still?
430, yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, I think we need to reduce it by 50. I'll put I'm going to throw 50 in, Bob. I'll tell you what, I'll do a double or nothing challenge here. I'll pledge 25, and if it's met, then I'll throw in another 25. So that'll be a total of 50 I'll throw in.
Okay, so 25 to get 25, and then you'll, so that would be beautiful time to do math. Let's see, so that would leave us at 355, so that would be awesome. If somebody will kick in 25 to match your 25, and then you'll kick in on top of it. Okay, that's very creative and very helpful. I wanted to draw y'all's attention to something because I saw it mentioned by Dave Nywert earlier today, and there's nobody in the country who writes more cogently or has followed more closely the rise of modern fascism and modern hate and modern right-wing politics than David Neiwirth. N-E-I-W-E-R-T, David Neiwirth. And on October the 14th, over at Mother Jones, motherjones.com, he and Sarah Posner published an article called How Trump Took Hate Groups Mainstream. Now, I don't know anybody that has the standing to challenge Dave Neiwirth's progressive credentials. I don't know anybody that's got the standing to challenge mine, for that matter, but I've been called supposedly progressive now because I won't go, chasing after Jill Stein. And apparently we're all supposedly progressive. But How Trump Took Hate Groups Mainstream is a long think piece, and it is definitely deserving of your attention. Because if I understand Dave Neiwirth correctly, the argument that he's making, and I believe it is an intelligent one, is that Trump, in beating back Trump in this election, it's not just about beating a political candidate. This becomes a seminal moment in American politics because the question is, and I've alluded to it in the past, you know, that somebody will come along after 4 years or 8 years from now with a much more nuanced, much more polished fascist message, and America will leap at it. And what Dave is suggesting is, Dave and Sarah, this isn't just his work, is that this is an opportunity, and rather a desperate opportunity, to beat right-wing fascism, white supremacy, white nationalism, Klanism, Nazism, back behind the baseboards into the filthy, darkened corners where they ordinarily live, and Trump has brought them out into the light. And third-party voting isn't going to do that. Gary Johnson voting isn't going to do that. Jill Stein voting isn't going to do that. The only thing that's going to do that is overwhelmingly beating Donald Trump and his goddamn Knight Rider supporters. And that's all. It can't be any more stark than that.
So we have to beat this ideology, beat it with a hammer, to an oblivion, a blowout.
That's the idea. Meanwhile, a note coming from Bill in Helena, Montana. He says, "Hi, Bob. FYI, Bernie raised almost $2 million for down-ballot progressives in 1 month. That should be the topic of discussion and support, instead of wasting time and energy on Stein or Johnson or any third party that cannot and will not, caps, win." Sorry about the all caps, just use them for emphasis. No, I didn't. You weren't screaming. And that is the question, and that is the issue. You know, are we going to a progressive future has to be built, and somehow or another, there's got to be an effort to take the Congress. Now, if I'm right, and the first viable opportunity to take the Congress happens in November 2022. Then that's a lot of damage that can be done between now and then. But if there's any hope at all, it will only be had by people determinedly trying to put progressive candidates up for nomination inside the party. And, you know, I'm sorry. I wish that the Green Party had a chance. But they don't much, because this is a money-driven system, and they ain't got any. And it's access system, and they ain't got any.
This dovetails into what you're saying about getting a Senate in our favor. If we don't do that, McCain's already come out and said that he's going to block any Supreme Court nominee by Hillary for the next 4 years. Does that mean, and we had this discussion in the chat room, that they can filibuster for the next 4 years, and we're going to be right where we are right now?
It means something even deeper than that, Steve. It means that where Donald Trump says, well, I'll let you know whether I accept the results of the election. When John McCain says we're going to filibuster every goddamn nominee to the Supreme Court that Hillary sends up, that's John McCain saying he won't accept the results of the election. I mean, it wasn't that far back when presidents were when people in the Senate were saying of presidential appointments to the Supreme Court, elections have consequences and we need to confirm this justice. I seem to recall that it was Democrats who said that instead of Republicans, but nonetheless, it was said.
So to answer my question, technically, the Republicans could do that if we don't get a supermajority. Is that correct?
They could, if we don't get a majority, period, they can do what they've done to Merrick Garland.
Exactly.
They can just declare that Hillary Clinton doesn't get to do her job as president of the United States and thereby note that they do not accept the legitimacy of the outcome of the election. And we got that polling data I mentioned a minute ago where 70% of Republicans say that if Trump loses, it'll be because it was rigged.
I've got your workaround for that worst case scenario, folks. I hope that Hillary does two things when she's elected. I hope that she does two things. I hope that she follows Bernie's lead to do what needs to be done in the wake of the election to gird up our loins, so to speak, for the battles ahead. And I, believe it or not, I hope that Hillary does, as president, what Reagan did. Reagan was never accused of what they tried to lay at the feet of Barack Obama. Reagan never led from behind. Reagan, when he had something he wanted to have done, he rallied people by making addresses on the television and letting people know that their congressperson and their two senators were just a postage stamp or a phone call away. And it's like radio and TV ratings. They don't rate everybody who's got a TV. They rate people who are representative of the public at large, the viewing populace. And they take those statistics and extrapolate them to say what the viewership is from sea to shining sea. Well, in the same way politically, you would be amazed what one or two or a dozen or 100 fucking letters from individuals that are not form letters, you would be amazed at what a fire that can light under an elected person. Okay? And even in radio, I remember if a personality got angry mail sent to the general manager, that person was gone. Hell, they did it to the Smothers Brothers show when it ran on CBS in the late 60s. Orchestrated outcry, real or imagined, real or phony.
Well, look what
have an effect.
Look what the Flush Rush. I mean, the Flush Rush campaign cost him millions of dollars in advertising.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's the principle I'm getting at.
Yeah, Scott. If I could weigh in here, my dad was a general sales manager for a TV station, like in the 70s, and you know, he'd get like complaints from people about certain programs or programming. And, you know, he always told me that for every person who writes one of these letters, there's probably like 10 or even 100 who don't, who feel the same way. And that's really the effect of lobbying your legislators with, you know, direct mail. And, you know, I guess these days you have to send postcards because of the damn anthrax, you know.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that statistic, because that is true. That's not just a truism. That's an actual fact. That for every person who writes or calls, there may be 100 or several dozen who feel the same way, but they don't take the time to make their feelings known.
Right. So again, it's a matter of strength in numbers. Now, this is what I hope the Democrats do if they can. You know, it looks like they've got about a 70% chance of at least getting a 50-50 split in the Senate with Hillary in the White House.
Simple majority, day one, change the rules.
Fucking abolish the filibuster.
But
That's the only way to do it.
They have to do it on day one. That's the only day that you can change the rules.
I know. And the guy
you're going to hope does it is Chuck Schumer.
He apparently
doesn't like the filibuster, and he's hopping mad about Merrick Garland being held up. So, you know, my hope is that, you know, a couple of things, you know, that once the Democrats, assuming they take control of the Senate, they announce that they're going to abolish the filibuster, number one. And number two, Obama comes out and says, I'm withdrawing my nomination of Merrick Garland for Supreme Court justice, because I think, you know, like the Republicans, you know, they wanted to wait for a new president to make an appointment. Well, here you go. You know, we're going to let Hillary make the next appointment. If she wants to renominate Merrick Garland, she can, or she can nominate whoever she wants to. And then that'll give the progressives a chance to, you know, weigh in and, you know, put pressure on Hillary to try to get a progressive justice.
Yeah, because I've never gotten the fanboy flop sweats over Merrick Garland.
No, exactly. He's not exactly.
He was put up there as somebody that would make the Senate Republicans look like the fools they are, because he's their kind of guy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, a white guy from Oklahoma.
and under the scenario that Rick is describing, what then will the Republicans be able to say? They've said since February, we must wait for a new president to be elected to fill this vacancy. They will have to stand there being the schmucks that they are. It's getting hoisted on your own petard is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And then if for some reason they don't, you know, if for some reason Hillary is president and we can't get the Senate back, that'll be interesting. But I don't, you know, I think what has to happen, we, you know, if Hillary can win by 7 or 8 percentage points nationwide, that'll give the Democrats a really good chance to take back the House. There's going to be lots of seats that come into play that really weren't looked at as competitive. And, you know, it's a potential that you could, you know, have a Democratic majority in both chambers of Congress.
Well, the other night Nancy Pelosi was on with Charlie Rose, about Wednesday night, I think it was, and she said that the Democrats in the House are pretty confident of 20 seats in this upcoming election, and all they need to regain control is 30.
Yeah.
And in today's world, I mean, 6 months ago, that seemed like pie in the sky in the sweet by and by. But given, thank God for Trump, for what he's done to disenchant a lot of Republicans and a lot of confused people out there, maybe he will depress the right-wing vote enough to make that possible, to get those 10 additional seats.
Yeah, and also keep in mind that we don't have to wait till the next census to redraw district lines. If we can get some of the state houses back and make them solidly Democratic, both houses as well as the governor, then they can just do redistricting now, so you can get rid of some of that gerrymandering and, you know, maybe even gerrymander in favor of the Democrats, just, you know, as part of turnabout being fair play. So that would be another way to maybe, you know, have a chance to retake the House without, sooner than 2022, I guess.
Hey, yeah. Props to Tom DeLay, man. Put one back at him.
Yeah, exactly. And, for those of you who don't know, the Supreme Court ruled, I don't know, about, was it 5 years ago, that you can, you know, you have to redistrict at least once every 10 years, but you can do it more often.
If you want. Yep.
So you don't have to wait for the census to do it. You can do it sooner. That's just the minimum amount that you must do it once every 10 years. You can do it, you know, you can do it 5 times every 10 years if you want to keep flipping back and forth between, you know, Republicans and Democrats in your state, you know.
And it really does go back to the thing that I've pounded the desk about for weeks, And that is the business of it all being a process. Change is part of a process. And like you all were, we were saying yesterday, the topic went over to the JFK's Man on the Moon in the Decade speech. Do folks realize that he made that statement, I think, 2 or 3 weeks after we sent Alan Shepard in a Mercury capsule on a Redstone booster on a 15-minute suborbital flight in May of 61. JFK, as he described it, it's an old Irish thing. You throw your cap over the high wall knowing that you've got to climb over the wall to retrieve your hat, your cap, okay? And I used to have it written down the number of days between his Man on the Moon within the Decade speech and the space of time between that speech and July 20th, 1969, when Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon, if you don't believe that the moon landing was fake, which I don't, okay? And it was a surprisingly short amount of time because we saw that it was a worthy thing to do and we behaved in a manner consistent to getting it done.
Yeah, yeah. And we need to do that with climate change, you know? We need a new Manhattan Project, so to speak, but, you know, for good purposes, not to destroy the planet, you know. And we can do it if we decide to, you know, that it's important enough and we get rid of some of these, you know, knuckle draggers in the legislative branches, you know.
Climate change, shoring up Social Security. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's so much that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of it can't be done without a responsible Congress, which by definition means a non-Republican Congress.
Right.
Hey, I got some good news, Rick.
Okay.
Charlene and Gary answered your challenge both.
Oh, so, awesome.
So both ends of your challenge got met. So okay. That means we're down to the hole's only $330 deep now.
Awesome. 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 Well, let me go ahead and hop on your site here and throw in my 50 here.
Well, I really appreciate it. And, you know, like I said, I hate even talking about this shit, but because it's a lot more fun to talk about what we're talking about here.
Well, once Uncle George starts to kick in his fair share, we'll be fine, Bob.
Well,
Uncle George Soros.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Now that I'm only a supposed progressive, I'm thinking maybe it's maybe I'll go out to the mailbox one of these days and I'll have a big old money check from John Podesta.
Oh, there you go.
Because seeing how my progressive my progressive street cred is in tatters.
There you go.
You know, mine, Malloy's. Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of Jill Stein, I'd like her to team up with Pat Boone and do some, like, metal with Pat Boone. Wait. I sent an email about that.
Hold up. My connection was really bad the other day. Did you play? Was Jill Stein, was that her? What was that?
What was that? She asks, that was this.
Oh, he's going to play. What is that? She wonders what will happen to the babies when all the mother's milk is gone bad. From the poison poured from the smokestacks, rising up like silent thunder from the ash.
My favorite part of that is the line about the silent thunder.
Well,
I mean,
Bob,
if it's silent thunder, how do you know it's even thunder?
Right, there's a bear shit in the woods. I mean,
the frightening nature of that is not unlike the album released by John Ashcroft, former governor of Missouri and former
head of Yeah, that song about the eagle being sore.
Let the eagles.
Please don't play that, Bob. I'm going to take away my money if you play that.
Hit the button. Hit the button, Rick.
Is that like the musical stylings of William Shatner or?
time to give your report, Rick. There's some good music.
Yeah, talk about the concert, Rick.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, tell us about Geezerpalooza.
Oh, you want to hear about the concert. Okay. Is it Desert Trip time, folks?
Geezerpalooza.
Coachella.
Oh, my God, that was wonderful. That was the best fucking show I've ever been to. Every act was great. I'd say the only one that maybe separated itself was just Dylan, just because the guy doesn't interact with the crowd at all. He just kind of turns his back to the crowd and just plays his piano and stands at the piano and sings and plays and, you know, doesn't give a shit about anything, just wants to do his music and get off the stage, basically.
Oh, I mean, he's a Nobel laureate, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, yeah, and actually, he became the Nobel laureate one day before he performed. And so, he performed first on Friday night, and, I mean, his voice sounded really very good, okay? And then, of course, the Stones came next, and, oh, man, these guys are just incredible. And I think the highlight of that one... They of course commented about Dylan being a Nobel laureate and how they'd never shared a stage with a Nobel laureate and so forth and so on, and that he deserved it and what have you. And I think the funniest line of the whole concert had to be one that Mick Jagger gave. He said, "I'm not one of these guys for age jokes, but some people are calling this the Catch Them Before They Croak tour." So I thought that was hilarious. Are you all there?
Yeah. So Keith,
we're just listening.
Keith was in good form.
Oh God, yeah, they were in good form, and Keith and Ron Wood, those guys were like jamming so well, and they were like exchanging like almost shit eating looks with each other, like Those guys are clearly good friends, it was just, Mick, the energy that guy has is just amazing. The guy's like prancing around like he's, 30 years old, and he's like 70 some, But, he's just, he still has his voice. I mean, everything was just really, really spot on. So
I wonder if he smells like rotten meat. I mean, deals with the devil and all of that stuff.
Who is this? Who are you talking about, rotten meat?
Well,
what about this?
Hillary.
Yeah, Hillary. According to
you, said he.
No, but according
to smells like sulfur, right?
Well, no. See, people who traffic with demons smell like rotten meat, according to the Bible, according to Alex Jones.
I thought it was sulfur.
No, rotten meat. Rotten meat.
Oh, speaking of catching them before they croak, Jan and I are going to see Tony Bennett on the 4th.
Oh, that's nice. Did see Tony?
No, on the 4th of November. Where he's going to be playing down at my, where Mama gets her gambling Jones met down at Rincon. And the weekend, next weekend, did I tell you how white my wife is? So this coming weekend, Martin Lawrence is going to be there, and our casino host asked us if we wanted to go. And I'm like, sure, get us a room or what have you. And she's like, sure. And I said, honey, you want to go see Martin Lawrence? And she looks at me inquisitively like, who's Martin Lawrence?
Who's Martin Lawrence?
Okay. are you really that white? I'm like, okay. Well, I said, you know what? Maybe it's just because, she doesn't know him by name because, and she has to have seen him on a movie. I mean, come on, Bad Boys. Come on, there were more white people at that movie than black people when I went to go see it. But yeah. I'm like, okay, let's see. So I Googled Martin Lawrence. I'm like, here, this is Martin Lawrence. And she's like, I have no clue who that is. I'm like, it is official. My wife is incredibly white. I'm like, wow, baby, you don't even know who Martin Lawrence is? I mean, where were you?
Is she so white that she glows in the dark, Tracy?
Shit. I don't know what it is.
But she loves mayonnaise, Rick.
Loves mayonnaise. I mean, we have a big again. I've never bought so much mayonnaise. I have bought more mayonnaise than last four, going on five. Oh my God, it'll be 5 years in January that Jan and I have been together. I have bought more mayonnaise in the last almost 5 years than I have in my entire lifetime of going to the grocery store and shopping.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Why are these people casing my house?
So, y'all, that was just night one. You want to hear about night two of the show?
What? Which day was it that the Who played for 2 hours?
That was at Desert Trip. That was the third day.
Stand by real quick, just because we've got, in the effort to put a few more shovelfuls of earth into the hole, I had a note from Brother Deacon Asa who said, tell the brethren and the sistren, I'll match the next U.S. grant that comes in, you right-wing, fascist, progress-hating radio host, you. You supposed progressive you. There's another matching challenge on the table of $50 courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa up in the up in the wilds of British Columbia. So if that gets met, that will take us down to 2:30 to go, which is a lot less horrifying for our 11th anniversary program this Monday. It's still kind of mind-boggling.
25 for me before I go.
Okay, 25. Okay, so that's 25 from Tracy and 25 more to go. Thank you, Tracy.
All right.
And for Monday, since it's your 11th anniversary, I'll start off Monday with $11.
Okay, that sounds good. So 25 down, 25 to go. And hopefully that'll get met. That'll take us to 2:30, and we'll just—we got 19 minutes to race toward. We got 19 minutes to raise $255.
Ooh, Lord!
So
cool.
Yeah.
So, all right, excellent. So I'll go real quick here. Night two was Neil Young, followed by Paul McCartney, and I think the highlight of Neil—I mean, the guy's like an amazing guitarist. And he's got a couple of sons of Willie Nelson in his band, which is called Promise of the Real. And the theme of the show, they had teepees set up along the stage on both sides of the stage. And the theme was Water is Life. And also, they
good
had
for
this
Neil.
Organic. What's that?
Good for Neil.
Yeah, good for Neil. He didn't mention anything about the Dakota Pipeline deal, but it was kind of implicit in that. And he also was advertising this organic seed company in Indio. And he had like a bunch of seeds that he threw out to the crowd. And he basically said, hey, I'm breaking California law by doing this because it says that you can't, you know, share seeds with anybody who lives more than 3 miles away from you, which is totally crazy. And he, of course, played Harvest Moon with the full moon rising above the stage, behind the stage.
Ooh.
And just totally magical. And then Paul McCartney came out. I mean, that guy is just, you know, he's a hell of a performer and has a lot of stories to tell about, you know, a lot of his songs are in memory of people who've gone, you know, his wife and, you know, John and, you know,
George.
And, George, you know, and George Martin as well. So he like, you know, he dedicated a number of songs to them. And Neil Young came out and played 3 songs with Paul. A Day in the Life, Give Peace a Chance, and Why Don't We Do It in the Road, which was a really good version, just tremendous. And a huge fireworks show near the end of the show, Live and Let Die, and, you know, he played like probably till, geez, he must have played for 9:40 to like 12:30 or something like that, so almost 3 hours. But
damn.
I mean, he's like, you know, and his voice is just like, these guys...
I've made my jokes and stuff, but that sounds like the entertainment bargain of the year.
I think so. I mean, it was the way I justified it. It was $275 a show, so you know. And then the last night was also incredible. I was camping there with a bunch of millennials, and we were sort of partying beforehand, so we got a late start to walk towards the venue for the Who show. So we missed the first few songs. But that has restored my life and my belief in, you know, some of my hope for humanity, because I think the next generation behind us is going to just be so awesome, and they're going to change the world and, you know, kind of hopefully reverse some of the fuck-ups that the baby boomers have caused. I had a chance to drop some acid before the Who show, but decided to try some edibles instead.
And it turned out that it was only 1/4 of the strength needed to really induce any kind of thing. So I was actually very sober during the last night. And so the WHO was really tremendous. And, I mean, those guys, you know, they're just, you know the way Townsend swings his guitar around and Daltrey still swings the microphone around. And actually, Townsend got wounded. He, like, banged his head on something, and blood was dripping down and so forth, you know, across his nose. And I was like saying, hey, come on, Roger, dab his blood away or something, you know. It's like the guy was like, you know, these guys are just so intense, you know. They were just, you know, they were like spot on. I mean, they played all their hits, you know, Eminence Front and Blue Eyes and My Generation, I Can See for Miles, etc. But I think probably the best show, just about the best show, was Roger Waters. And they had their Battersea power station set up in the desert, you know, with the smokestacks on both sides, and they actually had smoke coming out, and at times they would have guitarists playing on top of near the smokestacks. And there was this 100-foot pig that they had during the they played the album Animals, including pigs, and I think they played dogs. They played dogs and pigs is what they played. And the theme with the pigs was Donald Trump. And they had like quotes of crazy things that Trump has said, like I could shoot people in the middle of Fifth Avenue, I wouldn't lose a vote, and you know, all these crazy things. And you know, he had Trump's picture on the displays on the huge screens, superimposed with like a pig, and just all distorted and so forth, you know, and you know, body of a pig and the head of a man, and you know, then he had a 100-foot pig that floated behind the crowd, which had like you know, electronics on it, United We Stand, Divided We Fall, and had things like fuck Trump and his wall. And apparently some of the Red Staters in the crowd walked out with their middle fingers raised at the insult, because they didn't appreciate that. But
yeah, Roger Waters doesn't much give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Roger Waters doesn't care. But the guy is like, he's just so damn creative. And just the audiovisual imagery of his show, I mean, that's one of those shows where you don't want to sit like right in front. I mean, I was far enough back. I was probably 50 rows back plus the pit, you know. So, you know, I was plenty back. You know, I had my camera with me, my 800 magnification lens and stuff. And, you know, so I, you know, it was just tremendous. I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about it, except the first night I had to sleep in my car because I got to the show, the Dillon, I arrived just in time for Dillon the first night and couldn't park at my campground, and the campground closes at 2 a.m. And when it was time to get out of the show, I had to turn the wrong way out of the parking lot, away from my campground and towards the out of town. And they closed all the roads off leading into town, so you could only leave town, you couldn't come in. And so they had me on a roadway like for 2 hours waiting for the traffic to clear heading out from the venue, and by that time it was past 2, and so they closed the campground down and had to, like, you know, sleep in my car like in a makeshift car camping area. So that was interesting, but other than that, that's my only complaint.
Well, it was a whole weekend's worth of adventure, wasn't it?
Oh, it was great. I met some nice folks. You know, I met a bunch of students from San Diego State, including a guy who was a what did he call himself? He was a drug dealer, but he called himself a, I don't know. I was offered all kinds of stuff. You know, I turned down the coke because I thought, well, a 50-year-old guy, you never know, with hearts, you know, not such a good idea, you know?
Yeah, just stay retired.
Turned down the acid, but I did accept the pot. I figured that's safe, you know?
Yeah, so, why not? Yeah. And hey, so good news. Thank you to Chris up in the Northwest Territories, and thank you again to Tracy. Brother Deacon, Ace's challenge has been met. That takes us down to $230 to wipe out the week. So 430 on Monday is a lot more doable than 230. But hey, there's 11 minutes left in the program, and who knows what might happen. Let me jump in here with a couple with a quick note. Darlene in Connecticut writes and says, Clinton cane and wire steel cages. I agree with Bob. I think Republicans are going to get in line and vote for Trump. I'm seeing Trump-Pence signs on neighbors' lawns all over the place in my small town in Connecticut, even though some of those neighbors who are Republicans have told me they think Trump is a buffoon. And just so you know the mentality around this upscale area that I live in, one person had their Clinton cane sign set on fire on their front lawn in one of the neighboring towns. And today I just saw that a resident of my town that lives along one of the main routes has several Democratic signs on their front lawn, but their Clinton cane sign has a heavy-duty wire steel cage around it to protect it. Can you believe it? It could almost be funny if it wasn't so pathetic. But it is pathetic, and it is real. And it, anybody who wants to sit back and say, well, you know, we got this. All I can say is just the general reminder that there's only two ways to run an election campaign. Unopposed and scared to death. And I'm still scared.
Well, Nate Silver gives her, what, 10 to 1 odds? I mean, gives Trump 10 to 1 odds, and I've seen many people win on 10 to 1 odds, haven't you?
Sure.
So, yeah, it ought to scare you to death.
Well, hell, I buy a Powerball ticket. That's 29 million. $129 million to 1. And I'll take exactly. $129 million to 1 odds?
I mean, well taken.
What it's going to take for Trump to win is kind of a comeback along the lines of Harry Truman against Dewey, but it's been done before and it can be done again. So
he's got people willing to stand outside polling places with guns and in states where you can't do a damn thing about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bob, what if we had a cataclysmic attack or something? That could change the whole dynamic. That's what scares the hell out of me.
What if?
Yeah, I know you can what if yourself to death, but it's always a possibility.
Well, I'll tell you the funny thing out here. I ain't seen no Trump signs, but them two people.
Really? Have you seen Clinton Kane signs?
No. No presidential stuff at all.
Well, up wow. in the state of Jefferson, I guess it's just kind of a foregone conclusion, isn't it, Sparky?
Well, I think so. But, well, everybody knows the state's going to go for Hillary, so
yeah. Georgia.
I'll be interested to see, because I counted the votes in the county during the primary, and it was pretty close. If you count Clinton and Bernie's votes together, Bernie won my county, a Democratic thing. It was pretty close to what the Trump man got.
I don't think anybody dares relax.
No.
No, we can't. We can't. No. The stakes are too damn high.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I had to reschedule my proctology exam until after the election because I sure as hell can't relax.
Trim your fingernails, Buster.
I've got one. I've got to get my throat scoped, an endoscopy, and a colonoscopy on November 14th, so I'm waiting until after the election as well. So.
Yeah, you're just doing it all on the same day?
Yeah, I just get it all done, you know. So hopefully my Barrett's isn't too bad, or pre-Barrett's. So,
I've had two endoscopies in the last month and a half, so.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. How's Ferg doing, Bob?
It's complicated. Like I said, he got the healing hands of faith laid on him on Wednesday.
And they wrenched his arm.
They separated
his freaking shoulder, huh?
Then they prayed over it and re-injured it.
Yeah, that's going to work.
Wow. What do they think they are, defensive linemen trying to sack the quarterback or something? I mean, what the fuck?
Oh,
you know?
I mean, it's, Jesus needs a little help sometimes.
There you go. That's right.
Well, I just want to say I get to whip out my Medicare card for the first time Monday.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Birthday was a couple of days ago, but yeah, very, very, very happy Medicare birthday, man.
Happy birthday, old man.
Old man, look at my life.
I'm a lot like you.
Neil Young sung that one. Yeah,
I bet. Oh, great tune.
I bet 6 months of torments from insurance companies wanting to sell me. Supplemental plans and drug plans. And
yeah, how do you even choose?
Well, I just went with my wife already has. Easy way. Stay the same as she is. That way we make it one bill for both of us.
Yeah, one bill and one policy to read.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has been an interesting week. And I really, you know, I mean, it's not like it's a radio program, so it's not like we can have cake and ice cream on Monday, but that is, you know, that is pretty momentous. I look back at everything was different 11 years ago. 11 years ago, there was no Barack Obama. 11 years ago, we were in the middle of the Reign of Error. 11 years ago, the Iraq War was fresh, and pretty much the entire progressive movement was as one in demanding an end to war, an end to that war. Man, 11 years. I don't know. It'll just be a regular show, a regular program, but still, 11 years. How about that? Apart from that,
awesome.
Jay Cruzen wrote in and said, steel wire cage around the Clinton Kane sign. Maybe that means Clinton Kane for prison. Oh, Jesus. No, it means they were trying to protect it against the goddamn vandals. Because the Trumpansies do that kind of stuff. Generally, you only do that after, you know, they've already taken one or two down. Yeah.
Well, Georgia is a purple state, Bob.
Are you purple now?
That's what they say.
You're still looking pink on 538. So.
Yeah, I know. And you got to wait in line, 6 hours to early vote? They moved my voting precinct 10 miles for ADA reasons, American with Disabilities Act, which made no sense at all.
God, so. That's like that almost sounds like that almost sounds like you're part Native American. You know, in Nevada, if you're a Native American, you've got to drive nearly 200 miles round trip to vote because you can't have a polling place on the res.
It used to be within walking distance, and now it's 10 mountain miles away. So who knows?
Yeah, 10 mountain miles are different from 10 airline miles or 10 statute miles, too.
Oh, yeah, or 10 interstate miles. So talk to me, Bob.
Yeah,
you need to do is you need to flip over your state so it turns from blue to purple. You know, it needs a little more cooking on the other side, so it's not so damn pink, Steve.
Hey, can I tell you one little deja vu thing?
Okay.
Sure.
I opened up my voter guide thing, and what proposition do you think it just opened right up to?
61 or 64?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I looked down and went, wow, what a coincidence.
Okay, so don't leave us in the dark. We're not all Californians. What's Prop 64?
Recreational.
Legalization of recreational marijuana.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was.
As a matter of fact, I pulled that page out of my voter guide, and I'm holding it back for when it goes into effect. I'm going to use it to roll my first doobie.
Ooh.
That's a good use of your voter pamphlet, Scott, for sure. You know, democracy.
Oh, that paper ought to be, yuck.
Well, what the hell?
Well, back in the day, in a pinch, if you owned an expensive Bible, leather-bound, rice paper Bible, you could rip out a page from the Concordance and...
Amen.
Yeah, from the
Amen,
Concordance,
Brother
yeah.
Scott.
Yeah, I can tell you were taught well and dipped by the heel. If you've got, from the Concordance.
Raise your big bamboo album, much safer.
Well, see, that's what I was going to say. You're in San Diego, yeah. Scott. Just go down to the used record store, find a copy of this Cheech and Chong Big Bamboo album that still has the giant bamboo paper in it, and roll a humongous spleef with that.
Did I ever tell that story about when we were in Thailand? How you rolled up one of those?
With that giant paper?
Yeah, with that giant paper.
Yeah.
And y'all keep in mind that Frisbees have more than just one use as well.
Oh, well, they were a lot more useful back when dope had seeds in it.
Yeah, right, exactly, that's true.
Now you have to buy a grinder.
Yeah.
I used to have a Mary gin, like a cotton gin, but it had a little basket with slots. You would put the weed in it, and it fit inside of a clear plastic container. And you would turn the wheel, and gravity would do the rest. I wish I still had it.
One of these days, we're going to have to get Jim to retell the story of his electric bong with the stirrups on it.
Oh, jeez.
He reminded me of that the other night, and that's one for the night that he told that story. There wasn't a dry eye in the place. Everybody was weeping. They were laughing so hard. But an aquarium pump, a humongous bong, and stirrups. So, yeah. Well, listen, you guys, I got to get out of here. Time to go pick Margie up at work. It's been a fun Friday on the front porch, and I really appreciate everything. Thanks for joining in. Thanks to everybody who keeps all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And if you're hearing this over the weekend, podcast, whatever, we're 230 in the hole going into our 11th anniversary program. So it'd be great to knock that 230 out if you feel so inclined to help. Thank you, one and all, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.